House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for February 20th, 2003 is hereby convened. Welcome to you all. And I'll give you my normal speech. If you've signed up on our sign-up sheet, I'm going to call your attention to the box under where it says, please print legibly. If you are a government official...
Print legibly?
Yeah, you have to. Which does help, by the way. Or a lobbyist, you're governed under the two statutes regarding truthful and accurate testimony. If you are a member of the public, it does not apply to you.
You can
However,
be illegibly.
We still want you to give us truthful and accurate testimony. All right. So having said that, the chair would like to open a work session on House Bill 2372. Members, we're going to go ahead and Ray, we need to rescind the referral.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we had testimony that there was no revenue impact. The notice that I have, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, dated January 20th, 2003, is a notice of potential revenue impact.
Understand.
I have not heard back from the revenue office. I did give them a request to clarify. I can run down there, Mr. Chair, if you like, and see if they've got something right.
No, Ray, it's not necessary. The chair has been instructed to move the bill to the floor.
And we need you, Mr. Chair, and the committee need to rescind that subsequent referral.
Okay. The chair would entertain a motion to rescind the subsequent referral to House Bill 2372 to Revenue Committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will make that motion to rescind the revenue referral on House Bill 2372.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Smith has so moved. Discussion? Representative Byer.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on this. I really feel that, especially with the addition of the new date for inclusion, that there is definitely a revenue impact. It will take in more equipment and will increase the amount, and I can't support that.
Thank you.
Can I just ask a question?
Representative Hunt, yes.
Just helping me understand the process, we made a referral of maybe just one other bill to the revenue, the subsequent mm-hmm. referral to the revenue committee. What's our normal guidance on that when we have a statement that says, I realize in this case we don't have the revenue statement, but there may be a revenue impact. What's our normal process in terms of guidance on that?
Normally you would refer to the relevant committee, normally, and we're not doing that.
And so, I guess, can you just help me understand that?
There is some disagreement within the building as to whether this bill does, in fact, have any revenue impact whatsoever. And so, based on that, the chair has been instructed to move the bill to the floor.
If I could just ask one.
Absolutely, Representative. Feel free.
So, definitively, before it came for floor action, we would have a revenue statement that would delineate one way or the other, and
yes.
Help resolve it.
Yeah. I guess a revenue statement will be issued.
Yes, Mr. Chair, by procedure, I cannot drop a bill for second reading and ultimately third reading unless I have a revenue statement to bring with the bill.
And members, you should know the chair requested last night a revenue statement from legislative revenue in this regard, and it was the chair's intention to not work this bill today. It's the chair's intention to allow a revenue statement to be produced and for us to work through that process either one way or the other. And
this is here.
Yes. All right. Thank you. And the chair's been instructed otherwise.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just like, where are we?
Where are we?
We're
having discussion in regards to the rescission of the subsequent referral to House Revenue.
Thank you. I want to agree with Representative Byer. I really feel we should have had a fiscal statement and find this...
Revenue.
A revenue statement, and I find this, indifferent to the way we do business. Out of respect to you, I will move the bill, but I really want to go on record for saying that I concur. And also, I would just like to state that we did have questions we asked about other types of equipment that that was going to be answered, of whether it would be covered under this logging, yarding process or not. And we did not get that answer, and I hope that's part of the amendment.
Representative, I would guarantee you that this issue will be further discussed on the Senate side in probably greater detail. You can be assured of that. So we have a motion on the table. Any further discussion? Representative Hunt.
Just for the sake of the record, so my vote is not misinterpreted, I plan to support the motion to rescind this, which is not my statement one way or the other about whether I think there is revenue or not, just because I support the bill conceptually and think it provides importance.
And that's a good thought, Representative. Also keep in mind that if there were to be a substantial revenue impact statement that would come forward at second reading, we always have the opportunity to re-refer the bill back into committee, and we can move forward at that point. So there are procedures. Vice Chair, welcome.
Thank you. I had a question about, I want to know that this will go to revenue on the Senate side. Will it go the same route that we're doing here?
I would say that because there is a shared power arrangement on the Senate side, that the odds of this not going to revenue would be very small.
So the lack of shared power.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And has this ever been done before?
Oh, yeah.
Will we bypass this?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Consistently?
No.
This will not set a precedent?
No.
Well, maybe it does on this committee.
That's true.
Maybe.
So, with that, any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, the clerk call the rule on the motion to rescind the subsequent referral to House Revenue.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Byers.
No.
Representative Worth.
No.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Crump.
Aye. The motion is hereby passed to rescind the subsequent referral on House Bill 2416 to House Revenue. The chair would entertain a motion to move the bill.
Oops.
Excuse me. Allow the chair to correct himself. It is House Bill 2372 that we have just passed a motion to rescind the subsequent referral to House Revenue for the record. So the chair would entertain a motion to move the bill to the floor.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will move House Bill 2372 as amended to the floor.
There is no amendment,
okay.
But thank you. Members, it has been moved. House Bill 2372 be moved to the floor. Representative Worth, and then Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say for the record that I will not be supporting the motion on the floor. That I might have considered it, and I had considered it previously. But I think it's important that in the climate we're in, when we keep saying that no longer is business as usual around here, that we also follow those rules. And I think that this subverting the revenue process is not the way to go on this. So I will not be voting in favor of this.
Thank you, Representative Byer.
Yes, for the record, I too would be very supportive of this if it had gone through the proper procedure that had been laid out. And because of that, I will be a no vote, but not because I don't support.
Thank you, Representative. Additional comments, members?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Could you restate Representative Smith's motion, please?
Representative Smith moved House Bill 2372 to the floor. There was no due pass recommendation in the motion.
Yes, there was.
Oh, there was?
Yes.
My apologies. The chair simply has selective hearing. Can I borrow your hearing aid, Representative? Please. Just to show you folks, this is not a perfect process. Okay, so the motion on the table is made by Representative Smith. We move House Bill 2372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none, clerk call the roll, please.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
No.
Representative Ward.
No.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Crump.
Aye. House Bill 2372 is hereby passed to the full House with a do-pass recommendation. And the chair would like to assign a carrier. Any takers?
Representative Smith, I think, wanted to do this.
Would the Representative Smith that sponsored the bill want to carry it?
Oh, you know, I think that's a very good idea.
I think she would. If she doesn't, I will.
Is that all right, Representative? Okay. Representative Tudy Smith will be the carrier of House Bill 2372 to the full House. We're going to close a work session on House Bill 2372 and open a public hearing, a possible work session on House Bill 2416. Ray, you want to tell us a little bit about this bill? And welcome Representative Close, if you'd like to come forward, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2416, which is sponsored by Representative Close, defines science for the purposes of statute laws of the state.
Thank you, Ray, and welcome, Madam Chairman. It's great to have you here. And before we get started, the chair is going to hand the gavel to Vice Chair Gilman. I need to go testify at another hearing just briefly, and I will be back shortly.
Well, may I say thank you, Chair Krupp, before you leave.
Thank you.
And thank you, Vice Chair Gilman, and members of the House Agriculture Committee. I'm Representative Betsy Close, representing House District 15. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to propose a standard for the working definition of science and also scientific in the Oregon statutes. House Bill 2416 is a bill that I sponsored. And I will tell you, I also sponsored it last session. It did go through both houses, passed both houses, and went to the governor who vetoed it. The scientific work and research that state agencies conduct affects Oregonians' land and lives. When Oregon governmental agencies engage in scientific endeavors, House Bill 2416 would ensure that valid scientific work and research validated by statistics, experiments, or case studies, rather than opinion, are used when making decisions that affect our natural resources. This bill would reduce the ambiguity of the various ways in which quote-unquote science is used. It's an important concept, even though it's only a half-page bill. The American Physics Society developed and uses the definition that we have used in this bill. The American Chemical and Geophysical Society have endorsed this definition as well. And I've attached a couple articles from the Oregonian that illustrate the need for this bill. I'd also like to say that the Oregon Cattlemen's Association and the Oregon Farm Bureau support our efforts in this bill to reduce what is being called pseudoscience. So if I can call your attention to these articles, the first one is called Vanishing into Plain Sight. And it's an article about some fish called the Modoc sucker. And they're in southern Oregon's Bowers Lake in the Goose Lake Basin near Lakeview. And this fish was declared an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act, and it was said that there was just 5,000 of them left. Well, years later, they found them in Oregon, and they found that there were several hundred thousand of them. What had happened was the people who were counting the Modoc sucker didn't know what they looked like, and so they missed it. It's an example of how you need trained people, you need scientists, and you need a definition of science to be sure that you're not putting things on the endangered species list that don't need to be there, because there are economic impacts to communities when you do that, and there are jobs lost. And I think this is an interesting quote in the article. One of the scientists says, "We often think things are much rarer than they are because we don't go out and really look for them." And that's what you do when you do research. You have to do carefully controlled studies. You have to have data. And you have to run statistics to prove your conclusions. The other article is called Closer Look Shows ELF Got Its Science Wrong. And this is written by a professor of forest science and genetics at Oregon State University in Corvallis. And this has to do with the poplars. And as you may remember, there was an attack at the University of Washington a couple years ago because they were studying the genetics of poplar. And He says in the article that they had ignored the studies about poplar. They were saying that, I'll just quote what he says, that the tree farm near Portland, the environmentalists had said that the hazard of these tree monocultures is that they will replace wild forests. The terrorists failed to recognize that intensive studies of the kinds of hybrid poplars that the company grows, both in the United States and Europe, have shown that the plantations have extremely little influence on the genetic constitution of wild populations. There are no grounds for the claim that those trees significantly pollute wild forests. So here's another example of not taking into account science when opinions are made that can drastically affect communities, and these attacks did. So I hope that shows that we do have a need for this definition in the statute. I know there's another bill, House Bill 2457, that you're looking at by my good friend and colleague Bob Jensen, and he has added the term scientific, and I would not be opposed to that either. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Gilman, and Representative Close. I cannot recall why the governor would not go along with two, you know, large groups of people who thought this was the right thing to do, when he also supports OHSU and all the universities of the state and schools who all teach science. So was there any particular reason, or it was a bad day for the governor?
Well, I will read, Representative Chair Gilman, Representative Nelson, I'll read you from his statement. He said, this bill I'm returning herewith, enrolled House Bill 3344, unsigned and disapproved. This bill would allow a narrow definition of science to ORS 174-100. Well, it's quite long. I won't read it all. He just said, from a practical standpoint, it's hard to even judge how a particular definition might affect the various statutes it is used in. The word science is used numerous times in Oregon revised statutes. The context for all uses of science cover the spectrum of public policy topics from A to Z. He basically said there's many definitions of science, but as I said, we took this from institutions that are scientific institutions, and this is their definition. This is not something that we wrote.
So follow up, Mr. Chair. So basically really didn't have a reason other than we didn't want to do this, right?
Chair Gilman, Representative Nelson, I'm sure to him he did have a reason. But I was very disappointed.
I don't hear one. Okay.
Representative Hunt.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Are there other scientific associations that have issued either Representative Jensen's definition or other definitions?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, there's probably other definitions. We tried to take what we figured were reputable definitions, widely used.
If I could just ask one follow-up, just because this is such a new area to me, I have no idea. Have other states adopted similar definitions or different definitions of science?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, I could not tell you that. It might be worth researching if the committee wanted to do so.
Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me what problem does enacting this definition to science fix that we currently are facing? What problem does this fix?
Chair Gilman, Representative Worth, you may look in the packet. I believe you're out of the room, but there's two articles here showing how science, when it's wrongly used, can lead to groups either taking terrorist actions, which happened in Portland over the poplar farming, or the listing of an endangered species that was not endangered. And that's the article on the MODOC sector.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And you're saying that when science improperly used, and I guess I don't see how a definition will change the manipulation of data, which is improperly used, cook the books. So I'm trying to think of all the repercussions this will have. And can you tell me how what practice, according to how the statutes are now, will be changed once we institute a definition like this?
Chair Gilman, Representative Worth, when a person comes before a committee or they would come before a judge in a court situation, and call themselves a scientist, they would have to have credentials, of course, and they would also have to follow the scientific method, which when I was a graduate student getting my master's science degree, doing research, I had to form hypotheses. I had to test those hypotheses. Then I had to have a certain sample size. I had to take that data. I had to do regression analysis and other statistics on it to show it, that I could prove with my data what my hypotheses were. So there's a scientific process, and that's what the definition gets at. You have to base it on data and facts. And I will tell you that in my research, I found that 3 of my 6 hypotheses were wrong. And it surprised me greatly, because I was very sure that they were right.
All of us here?
Yes,
right, your null hypothesis. I've done a lot of that too. Just in your null hypothesis. Well, so and I guess I am assuming that when we hear from the experts in from OSU and from other agencies that they talk about the whether it's the salmon issue or it doesn't matter when they talk about science. I'm assuming they're using empirical research. So are you implying that they're not using a standard methodology? And I mean, have we found that their science, when they come to this committee, and the science we use as a body is not based on scientific research according to this method?
Representative Gilman and Representative Worth, what this would do is it would keep from people giving their opinion and saying that this is a scientific fact. They would have to show research. That is our hope.
So, final follow-up.
Yes.
So are we going to make them show their work, this? I don't know how how would we prove that it's an opinion and it's not based on sound science according to this? Would we make them bring all their calculations and their to show us then their opinion? Because I think it's important that we do get their opinion as scientists. But I don't want to look at the data and try and analyze it and come up with the answer. So are we going to actually make them then be able to produce their work?
Chair Gilman, Representative Worth, if it's in the statute, then it gives more credence to asking for the data and not just taking the opinion. And I think you will see this in the courts as well. I've talked to Representative Williams, and they are moving in the courts to require that expert witnesses show some proof that they have data and they have research.
But one final thing. Because I actually have asked for the data, especially in the Salmon Committee, and the scientists do hand over reams of paper. So I guess I'm just not convinced that this is necessary and that scientists currently are doing their job. So.
And Chair Gilman, I would like to mention that Representative Worth did vote against this bill last time, so I understand that she is in opposition.
Further questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mary Buckman.
That's right. All here. Mary Buckperson. That's Mary Buckperson. Not Mary Buckman. It's Mary Buckperson.
Fisherman. Yeah. Fishers. Representative Gilman and members of the committee, my name is Mary Buckman. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the American Fisheries Society.
Yeah.
The American Fisheries Society is comprised of over 400 fisheries and aquatic science professionals from federal, state, and tribal agencies, colleges and universities, and diverse private employers, including students and retirees. Our mission is to improve the conservation and sustainability of Oregon fishery resources and aquatic ecosystems. We'd like to testify today to urge you to reject the definition of science that's contained in House Bill 2416 and not limit decision makers, the public, and the scientific community to such a narrow, restrictive application of science. On the surface, this definition is appealing, and almost everyone would agree it covers a narrow aspect of science, or at least a portion of science. But as scientists, we wrestle with and debate over the appropriate use and interpretation of scientific information. Science covers much more. This bill doesn't clarify this situation. It adds additional levels of interpretation and prevents decision makers from using all scientific information available when deciding a course of action. Our primary concern is limiting legitimate science to testable hypotheses or laws and theories. this excludes a lot of what's in the realm of currently acceptable science. Salmon monitoring is described in the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds wouldn't fall under this definition because monitoring by nature isn't based on testable hypotheses. Habitat surveys that identify ecosystem health also aren't based on testable hypotheses. We rely then on logic and professional judgment to assemble the relevant pieces of information and coalesce this information appropriately. We additionally, the state and a lot of other agencies have another layer. In the state, it's the independent multidisciplinary science team that provides a further filter that this data is being used appropriately. Additionally, on a technical level, statistical literature differentiates between hypothesis testing and estimation. They're distinct, separate aspects of statistics. To limit science to expect it to all result from hypothesis testing is short-sighted. The two areas have common underpinnings, but they're separate and clearly distinct uses of statistics. Additionally, hypothesis testing involves a predetermined level of probability, and this bill says nothing about the probability levels that this hypothesis testing has to be done at. A further point, science experiments are, by their nature, conducted under a fairly narrow set of time and space circumstances. In fisheries, we might do an experiment in River X in year 2000. The question that this definition begs is, then would that apply to River Y in year 2002? Would it even apply to the same river in 2002 because the climate's changed? I mean, we're in a dry spell or a wet spell. We rely on coalescing separate pieces of information to draw conclusions. The natural world, in my opinion, isn't as straightforward as physics and chemistry, where this definition arises from. And so it's imperative that we're allowed to use all pieces of information available to us to draw a picture of the real world. An additional point that we're concerned about is applying this definition throughout the Oregon statutes. Like it appeared the past governor said a couple years ago, it's unclear how this would apply to all decisions. Budget forecasting, which is a part of economic science but doesn't relate to hypothesis testing, might not be considered legitimate science under this definition. What's taught as science in schools might be limited based on this definition. In summary, it's our opinion that science is broad, complex, and varied. I mean, as an organization, we would hope and expect that science is fully included in all decisions. We believe that the definition listed in House Bill 2416 would only limit the tools available for good decision-making and therefore shouldn't be recommended by this committee. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mary. Members, we have questions. Representative Wirth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Buckers. So this says there's no fiscal impact, but I'm wondering how the people who currently provide science research and information to lawmakers, this would now require them, I imagine, in many instances, to do their jobs differently. And so can you give me any idea, how would it cost an agency to implement this, and especially an agency that provides information to policymakers that are paid when we make our scientifically based decisions? How would this incur a cost, do you believe, in different agencies and having to have that work producible if required?
I don't think the question is that the work is producible. I think we all are aware that our work is, we want our work to be under scrutiny. That's part of what makes science strong is keeping it scrutinizable by lots of people. The fear that I would have is we would be required to do additional sorts of experiments under different circumstances and not rely on the most efficient ways to put together information, relying on other people's work that's closely related but not perhaps under a strict definition directly applicable to the situation that we're looking at.
Well,
yes.
So you would say then that this would cause at least some current way jobs are being done to have to be done different. And this would be
I think jobs would have to be done differently.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really would ask you basically the same two questions I asked Representative Wells. Are you aware of definitions that other states have adopted?
I am not aware of definitions other states have adopted. There's definitions, if you look at the National Science Foundation and various organizations like that, they're primarily federal or out of Washington, D.C. at least. And they don't really as far as I can tell, they don't have definitions. They have small books that describe science and what it means to be a scientist. Anyway, so in the ones I've looked at, that's what I've found.
Yes, I'm going to follow up. Do you think there might be some value in having, I recognize your concerns with this particular language, but do you think there might be some value in having some definition, which might well be more broad and inclusive, that Oregon might pursue adopting in the future?
I think we could pursue it. I think it's more than a definition. I think it's a process also of collaboration and integration of ideas. And I think it's important to keep some of the different aspects of science separate. I mean, physics and engineering behaves a lot differently than natural systems.
Is it worth?
Question. Can you tell me, do you know of any instance where statute was written so that to compel lawmakers to base their decisions on science?
Well, I believe there's a lot of them that say on the best scientific information available.
And do you believe that's happening?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So there's just ask if there's no, do you see that this fixes any problem that exists or
I don't see that it fixes problems, and I see that it could create additional problems by limiting what we can use. I mean, as scientists, as aquatic scientists, we're scrambling to find all the pieces of information that we can possibly apply to a problem. Anyway, so if we're limited in the sources that we can use and how we can put them together, I think it would inhibit our ability to draw conclusions.
Thanks.
Members, additional questions?
Mary, I've got your written testimony, and I've heard you articulate your thoughts here. This is a bill that has, about 20 words in it,
right,
in terms of what we're adding. And basically, which of those words create the issues for you that have resulted in your testimony?
Representative Chaircroft.
Thank you.
The primary phrase that bothers me is the testable laws and theories, that it limits science to testable laws and theories.
Okay. And you've pretty much explained that. And to the layman, who I don't think any of us up here are scientists, at obviously the level that your organization is, part of the political debate we have about all of these issues involving endangered species and so forth is that there are those who feel very strongly that you have a scientist over here who says A and a scientist over here who says B. And you respect them both for being learned and educated and experienced individuals, but they reach different conclusions. And we as policymakers, when we're debating and discussing policy, really don't know what's the reality there. And so it seems to me that one of the things we argue about is someone comes up with a scientific analysis of something. And it sounds good. Sounds like it was done well. But then, again, somebody else comes up with a different thought altogether that sounds good and sounds like it was done correctly. How are we supposed to ferret out the truth unless you have some kind of a replicatable type, so you can prove it over and over again to be fact?
That's exactly the basis of science, replicatable. But it's not all base. It's not all that simple. That applies to a narrow situation, and then what we have to do, because we don't have the ability, we don't have the money, we maybe don't even have the technology to study all systems in all circumstances, that we have to take the pieces of information the best we can and draw professional conclusions. It's going to be messy. I mean, if we look at women and hormone replacement, I mean, how many times has that gone back and forth? And that's a fairly straightforward question. It's a complex system, and we're forever, you know, making steps to learn more about it and understand it better. But until we do, to say that just because we can't prove it with a testable hypothesis that we assume it's not true is equally as, it leaves out information also.
Well, that's and that certainly is a valid argument. Part of what our frustration is sometimes in this process is that decisions are being made at the state and the federal level that impact people's lives based on the word science. And if it can't be established as truth, then we're making some fairly dramatic, at least I have observed over time, some fairly dramatic changes within our world that may or may not be based on sound scientific research, I guess, for lack of a better term. And that's why we're frustrated, is because we want the truth. We want to make good decisions. And we don't want to be causing undue burdens on one group of people if maybe that science was flawed or that opinion is very strongly rebutted by another scientist. And then you kind of get down to the basic issue of politics. And, you know, everything in life is political, clearly, but, I think some of us, and I would include myself in this group, would really wish there was some magic formula that you could wave out there over every issue and the truth would come forth. But when people are involved, it just doesn't seem to be the case.
Chair Kropp, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, as scientists, we're equally frustrated with, I mean, it's too bad all us scientists can't absolutely agree that these pieces of information make you come to that conclusion unequivocally. It's just not that tidy. You know, we do have layers, like I mentioned, the independent multidisciplinary science team. We also have peer-reviewed literature. So I think the science community works hard to police themselves. A gold standard is what appears in peer-reviewed literature. But then it still takes applying that to different situations, in this case in Oregon, to decide whether it applies there or not.
Okay. Well, it's sort of like polling in politics. You never know how that's going to turn out. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Katie Fast and Gil Riddell. And Gene Wilkinson, for that matter.
Just keep coming.
Welcome to you, and Katie, why don't you start first?
Thank you, Chair Krupp, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fast, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Many times when we have discussions and we make decisions around politics, those decisions are made on personal beliefs, opinions, and philosophies. However, when the legislature directs in statute that a decision be made by science, it removes opinion and belief. And that's what we feel 2416 will ensure. 2416 defines science as a systematic enterprise of gathering knowledge about the universe and organizing and condensing that knowledge into testable laws and theories. There are two key words in this definition, systematic and testable. Systematic ensures organized, well-thought-out procedure for conducting science, while testable requires that the research and information must be valid and consistent when peer-reviewed. As Representative Close mentioned, the language was drafted and adopted based on a resolution by the American Physics Society, which I have attached with my testimony. And the American Physics Society developed the definition due to their growing concern over pseudoscientific claims. The cattlemen are also concerned about pseudoscience. As an industry, we are concerned that the decisions regarding the management of our lands and our livestock are accurate. The cattlemen are strong supporters of water quality research, grazing research, and rangeland management research. We want to know the truth. Oregon's natural resource regulations must be based on a foundation of organized, knowledgeable, established and detestable results and theories required to be relied on as science. When science is the term used and the information must be testable, it must be repeatable. Our membership is very concerned with laws that use science, but the science isn't there. It's somebody's opinion instead. To answer Representative Hunt's question, which he's not here, I believe, and I can get the information for you, that Washington defines science in their land use laws, and I will get that information to the committee, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Katie? All right.
Okay.
Jean, welcome for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Jean Underhill Wilkinson, Associate Director for Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. On my written testimony I have before you, I made some of the same points, although not quite as many as Katie did here. So I'll just add a couple of remarks. In our environmental laws, which I'm a little bit more familiar with than some of the other laws, many of them, both on the state and federal level, include the need for science and that those decisions need to be science-based. And those decisions, of course, as you've commented and heard, can have huge impacts on people's property and people's lives and legal liability for people, especially, and small businessmen. So the scientific basis and the need for science is there in statute, but it's really up to the administrative agency's discretion as to what science is used and what science means and how much science and what varieties of science should be used in making their decisions. Now, through history, environmental groups have done a good job in being very aggressive in challenging some of the science that the agencies have used, and that's made big impacts on the ways our laws have been interpreted and applied to people's lives and people's property. You know, the agriculture and ranching industries haven't shown that they've been able to provide the resources to be able to do the same thing in challenging what science basis was used. And so this definition for me is not a huge deal, but it really just provides a basis, a fundamental understanding of the type of science that we're talking about to render these decisions. And it really gives us an opportunity to ask the right questions and a guidance to the administrative agencies. And so it really balances the playing field a little so that we can all ask the questions and have assurances that the adequate science is used for these decisions that have massive impacts. Thank you.
Okay. Members, questions? Hearing none. Welcome, Gil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. My comments will be very succinct. AOC strongly supports science-based active adaptive management of the landscape, and it's difficult to do that properly without the science.
Okay. Members, actually, Representative Beyer, I think you had a question. I missed you. My apologies.
Vague concept of actually even forming the question that I want to ask. So, yeah.
Well, I'm sure as we go along, you'll have more opportunities to do that. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm trying to pass away up here. I refrain from doing so.
Thank you.
We're in the hearing.
And I'm not contagious, I might add. The science of medicine, whatever that is trying to take care of me. Maybe I wish that Ms. Buckman was still here. I guess this is such a crazy question, but, I mean, is not one definition better than none? is my question to all three of you and to her. I mean, this just seems like it's such a political issue that it makes me crazy, that the whole purpose is not really to, you know, to write a definition for Webster. It's, you know, it's which political affiliation wins when we need something that makes sense for everybody. I mean, would not one, I mean, maybe we have to change it two sessions from now and we find out that, you know, it doesn't work or that one is not the right one. But, I mean, shouldn't we have a definition?
Chair Krebs, Representative Nelson, I would have to say not one definition is better than none. We need to have one that has been well thought through, that is endorsed by scientific community, that is endorsed by the landowner groups, which I believe that this definition does quite well. We need to have a definition that requires science to be systematic and testable, peer-reviewed, and that's what this definition does. So, yes, this definition is better than none.
Chairman Krupp, Representative Nelson, I agree a definition is better than nothing. Like I said, I don't think this definition and applying it to the administrative agencies will have that large of an impact. But again, it just provides kind of a fundamental baseline understanding of the caliber of the type of science that needs to be used to make these critical decisions.
Would it be possible, Mr. Chair, for me to ask Ms. Buckman that question?
Oh, absolutely. But before we do, I wanted to ask any of you to respond to Mary's testimony in regards to, as a scientist, why she would like more flexibility. Any response to that?
Mr. Chair, I can take a stab at it. In listening to her comments, and I'm a lawyer, not a scientist, so I'm very much a layman in this, but it seemed to me that if there were different conditions that were being tested, you'd account for that as variables, and that would not be prohibited by this definition. It just would have to be taken into account in your findings. And if the ambient air had changed over time, or if you're talking about a different stream, then you recognize the variables and report those along with your findings. So I guess my sense of her testimony was that this definition would not disturb it if one were to approach the question and the hypothesis in a systematic way and account for the variables, the strength of the opinion, the risks that following it or not would potentially incur. Be my offer.
Okay. Any further to that?
I agree.
All right. Well, thank you, three. Representative, would you like to ask?
Yes, I would.
Mary, would you come forward, please, again? Representative Nelson would like to ask you some additional questions. Thank you, and for the record, once again, state your name.
My name is Mary Buckman.
Is it Dr. Buckman, by the way? Or
no.
Okay. Just, I didn't want to be insensitive to not addressing you correctly. My apologies. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Buckman, I'm just trying to understand this whole crazy world of science. And, you know, as a teacher and... You know, I would think if I, you know, if my doctorate in mind science is not science, what is it? You know, I'm kind of going along those type of lines. And so I just want to know, I mean, one basic definition better than none. For example, why do we, you know, revise Webster Dictionary every year? Or, you know, because we, you know, it takes on additional meanings and so forth. So would not... a definition help us get to the next point of where, you know, maybe you see changes that would need to be taken. Trying to find out why a definition, we can't at least 90% of us or 80% agree to use one, and if it needs to be changed in the next period of time, do so, amend it, or like we do continuously anyway.
Chair Croft and Representative Nelson,
Our concern is that this limits what we are able to call science, and it goes back to the testable laws and theories. We absolutely believe that systematic collection of information is an important part of science, but under a statistical definition of this, which is statistics is my personal background in addition to fisheries, testable laws and theories have a real clear definition, and it's narrow. We use far more information than that in our decision making. So while I agree that we could possibly come up with a definition of science that would work, it would have to be, like I said earlier, it had to be far more encompassing than this and include the process of coalescing the information.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I guess I want to know that in the educational system, we should drop science because nobody knows what it is.
Absolutely not.
Well, do you see how, how frustrating it is for us who are not scientists per se in, I guess, whatever area you specialize in? I can't see why there couldn't be one definition. Y'all can't get together and come up with something for us to use, and let's get on with life and, like we do, and stop spending so much time on this, a word.
Chair Kropf and Representative Nelson, I think it's a more complicated definition. I think we could. I don't think this definition is it.
Okay, but you think we could come up with it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any additional Representative Byer?
Well, I still don't know if I've got this. I'm just having a really hard time figuring out what is different about this than what is already happening. I mean, obviously, scientists out there are gathering knowledge about and organizing knowledge and condensing knowledge, and in their mind, it's testable. I mean, what they're doing, but I don't understand, I guess, what this would solve. I mean, isn't that what's happening almost now?
Chair Kropf and Representative Byer, I would agree that this is what we're doing now. The piece that I want to emphasize that I think limits what we do is that we have to condense the knowledge into testable laws. Going through the scientific process, there's pieces that are testable laws and theories. We combine that with information that's gathered from monitoring, for example, like the Oregon Plan, where we look at survival of salmon going in and out of rivers. We combine all those pieces of information to draw conclusions about how the system works and what impacts the system. If we had to have a testable hypothesis of the final result, it's almost not doable. The natural world, both on a time scale and a complexity scale, doesn't allow you to do those specific kind of experiments.
Yes, absolutely.
So where do we get to from this bill that says testable laws and theories, where do we get to that? Where do those come from? I mean, they're not in this bill, so who determines the test?
Well, I think rather, Representative, they're not referring to a specific circumstance or test. I read the intent of the bill as being such that when one is employing practices of scientific research measurement, that it gets back to that issue of, is it replicatable? Now, some years ago, we had a couple of gentlemen that said they had invented cold fusion. It's never been replicated since, at least not to my knowledge. And so I guess for us to establish scientific fact, we know there are certain things you can do with atoms that produces very large and violent explosions. And that was replicatable, and that happened time and time again. They established that as a law of nature, and it is one of our greatest fears in society, is that circumstance would come to fruition. It was based on science. It was based on science. It was replicatable, and you could count on. Now, we have great arguments and have had in this body in regards to is the scientific DNA of a hatchery fish as good as the scientific DNA of a wild fish, if there is such thing as a wild fish anymore. And so I guess that's why I get back to that issue of replicatable. I mean, can you, because that to me, again, as a farmer, I'm looking at this, you know, every time that I engage in a farming practice, is it going to produce the desired result? And if it does time and time again, then I come to rely on that, and I know that it's accurate. If the science is not replicatable, if the analysis or experimentation is not replicatable, then it would seem to me that we shouldn't be basing policy on that until we can come to a place of replicability.
Chair Kropf, I would agree with that. And now a situation for fish might be that we know without a doubt that, you know, fish, salmon need relatively cool water, and we can do experiments left and right that say if you put them in warmer water than that, they die. But then the next, and that's replicatable over and over and over again, the next level then is to say, so what does that mean about what we do in the Alsea River? And so you take those pieces of replicatable science and you look at the past performance of the Alsea River, for an example, and you use the scientific, you know, the body of scientific knowledge then to draw conclusions about what's the best way to recommend on a land use action or something in the Alsea River. So you have to take these separate sources of information and try to put them together. And our concern with this definition is this limits our ability to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. We appreciate that. Chair would like to call Stephen Kafori and Warren Eaney. Okay, thanks. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, and for the record, state your name.
My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here today representing the Wildlife Society, the Oregon chapter. I, too, am a lawyer, not a scientist, and therefore, to have a definition of science, I brought a scientist with me.
All right.
Not only did I bring a scientist, but I brought a scientist who is a representative of the Wildlife Society. The Wildlife Society is not an advocacy organization like the Sierra Club or the Audubon Society. We are a society of scientists, and our main purpose is to educate each other and the public about issues regarding wildlife science. Our membership is varied. We have people who are employed by state and local and federal government. We have people who are employed by timber companies and public utilities. We have people who are employed as private consultants. So we try and have a wide background, a variety of opinions, because our people come from a wide background of job opportunities, which often can color a person's viewpoint. So we think that when we speak on behalf of the wildlife biologists, we are not representing a slice of the wildlife biologists or a group of the wildlife biologists, but the broad spectrum of people in the state of Oregon who are professional wildlife scientists. Because we are not an advocacy organization, we don't come to the legislature and advocate for or anti on bills, but we do like to bring our concerns on the two areas in which we are experts, and that one of those areas is science and the other one is on wildlife management. You have an issue of science before you today, and we'd like to talk about this bill as our organization views it.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome. For the record.
Thank you. Yes, Chairman Kropf, members of the committee, my name is Warren Eaney. I'm a professionally certified senior wildlife ecology with degrees in wildlife biology and statistics and over 40 years of experience in my field. And I am here as the Conservation Affairs Chair for the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society. We would like to bring up some concerns regarding House Bill 2416. I think our our feeling about it is that an incomplete or poor definition is worse than none. And so we'd like to point out some things about this that where we think that this may be incomplete or poor. The term science is defined in numerous places. My written testimony mentions some of these places, and I'm not going to go through these at this time unless you have specific questions about them. I go all the way from a physicist and his definition of science, which you can see is much more extensive than the one that's proposed. There is an everyday dictionary definition from the Webster's Collegiate Dictionary that is also much more extensive than the one that is proposed. It's interesting to us that the proposed definition is almost word for word from a book, Consilience, that's written by several years ago by Harvard professor E.O. Wilson, and it got on the bestseller list, which is unusual for a book about science. But he put it this way, science, to put its warrant as concisely as possible, is the organized, systematic enterprise that gathers knowledge about the world and condenses the knowledge into testable laws and principles. But the point is, Dr. Wilson, then Professor Wilson, then goes on for another 13 pages to further describe science, and that's about what it takes to fully describe what science does. He talked about the diagnostic features of science, repeatability, economy, measurability, further discovery, and connectability. He talked about reductionism, or dissection and analysis. He talked about synthesis and integration, and then ended the chapter by saying that science is striving to attain the grail of objective truth. And I think that's where science and politics come together, is you folks are interested in objective truth from what I've heard up to now, and I think objective truth is the ultimate aim of science also. In our field, wildlife science, we make use of science and scientific methods to collect information and to make that use of that information for making decisions on the management and conservation of wildlife resources and values. It's both a tool and a discipline. To be scientifically valid, decision-making information must be collected using the methods that are described, I think, in the definition and some of these other definitions also. We observe and describe natural phenomena. Then we formulate hypotheses to explain these phenomena. Then we test these hypotheses through experimentation and observation. And to be valid, this experimentation and observation must be repeatable. That is, another scientist using the same method should obtain similar results. And the results and techniques of these validated experiments can then be used to collect new data that can be applied to making decisions and to take actions with some confidence that these actions will produce predictable results. But even when these rigorous procedures have not been followed, field scientists can use the discipline and their experience to collect objective information and make use of that information with confidence that actions taken will tend to produce predictable results. And I think here's where part of the conflict arises, is because when we get to the point where we have to project from the rigorous experimentation that has gone on to a related area, then there is an opportunity, I think, for different viewpoints, scientific viewpoints, to arise. And that's part of the basis, then, for doing further experimentation and further testing to make sure that these results that are obtained in one area can be applied with predictable results in another area. I think our main concern is that the proposed definition is too narrow to encompass science as we understand and apply it. There's a long list of state and state activities that would be at issue if we had a very narrow definition of science. Fish and wildlife habitat conservation, endangered species designation and endangered species recovery, watershed management, and resolving a number of resource conflicts. This definition, as proposed, could preclude most of the science underpinning that the natural resources professions use in the fields of agriculture, fisheries, forestry, horticulture, range, recreation, water resources, and wildlife. We are not sure that there is a need to put a definition of science into the Oregon statutes, but if you perceive that there is a need, this definition that's proposed does not cover it adequately and should be developed and refined with the help of recognized scientists. I thank you for the opportunity to present our perspective on this bill. I would note on the handout that that there is a list of other scientists who contributed to this statement. The head of the Department of Fish and Wildlife at Oregon State, the head of the Oregon Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit, Dr. Anthony, Dr. Edge, Dr. Jack Ward Thomas from the School of Forestry, University of Montana, and a couple of others. Are there any questions?
Question.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Gilman. Thank you. I just have a quick question then. If this is too narrow, what would you change it to?
I think it needs to we need to be putting in not just laws and theories. In the fields of physics, there are laws, laws of thermodynamics, example, laws of mechanics. And when you get into the field of biology or other resources, there are very, very few laws. There are theories. Theory of evolution is an example. And theories are scientific principles on the way to becoming laws. Sometimes they're going to take a long time. And it's very, very difficult to come up with testable. There are very, very few testable laws and theories in the field of biology. However, that doesn't mean that we aren't doing good science. What we are doing is we're developing principles. We're using the same techniques. We're using statistical methodologies to make sure that our methods are testable and replicable. And we're coming up with principles, which is probably another word I would add, along with probably maybe 40 or 50 more to this, to make sure it defines science as we practice it.
Other questions? Representative Worth.
Mr. Chair, in your opinion, would implementing this language prohibit any bad science or inaccurate science from ever being presented to the legislature?
Chairman Gilman, Representative Worth, I foresee this effect. The definition would be so narrow that very little would be admissible as science, so that everything else then would be reduced to the same common level, and someone's non-scientific opinion or pseudoscience would then be on the same level as someone's pretty good science. And so I think it would preclude the admissibility of science on a level that says this is better information than something that is not science.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it, how do you pronounce your name, sir?
Anya.
Is this doctor?
No. What was it again? Dr. Science used to say, I'm not a doctor, but I do have a master's degree.
You're not a doctor, you're a master, right? Okay, master. Who's the most famous scientist you're aware of that's ever existed?
Ooh, that's a in 2 minutes you want me to come up with the most famous scientist that I think ever existed. Current or past?
Mm-hmm.
Past. I have a lot of respect for Galileo because of what he had to go through to bring science into the position it is now.
And should we go to his definition? Follow up, Mr. Chair. The reason I'm just asking you that question because I'm wondering. I mean, should we go to his definition?
Well, I'd like to use Dr. E. O. Wilson's, Professor E. O. Wilson's definition of science. Pardon me, excuse me, Representative Gilman, Representative Nelson. I'd like to use E. O. Wilson's description of science, which takes about 13 pages.
Well, considering that most, Mr. Chair, most of us legislators have difficulty with lots of words. I mean, for the sake of brevity, I mean, what could the definition be? I mean, what would it be in Galileo's? I mean, what turned him into a great scientist? He proved that something happened continuously over and over again.
The science Chairman Gilman, Representative Nelson, the principles that Galileo used was observation and experimentation to acquire knowledge. And and that is not in the definition per se.
Okay. So, follow up, Mr. Chair. So if we added those words, would that, then would this be an acceptable definition?
There are many other words. I think what I'm trying to say is that there's a process. First, we come up with a basic understanding of what's going on. Test that understanding. We develop a hypothesis. Test that hypothesis. Then we use the results of that hypothesis to apply in other areas. Mm-hmm. So the concept that you're talking about, using observation and experimentation to acquire knowledge, is true, but we also go beyond that, and then we say we use the results of those experiments and the results of that observation to extrapolate our knowledge into other areas. Mm-hmm. Science is sometimes required to come up with data or information that has not been fully tested, but is based on their best interpretation of the existing knowledge and the existing techniques and the tools that are generally accepted in the field. And we need to also include that in science, because if we did not include that in the definition of science, we would be reducing the scope of information that's available for decision making, such as you do and other and state agencies do, to probably, you know, one-tenth of what they are now, because a lot of what they're doing right now is based on an extension of the ideas, an extension of the techniques and the tools that have been previously developed under more rigorous methods.
Last question, please, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Well, sir, I think you came up with an excellent definition. I mean, I think using the concept of having a hypothesis, testing it, using those results and doing this through a process of observation and experimentation to gain facts, and then using those facts, extrapolating those facts to use them in another application. I mean, to me, I think this is brilliant. So, you know, maybe we ought to just, you know, have you move over to the Senate and amend the bill. Put those words in it, and we're done with this, and then we can get on with some real scientific missions that are economically, economically valuable to the state. I mean, for an example, the many, many good things that OHSU is doing right now. I mean, I hesitate. In fact, I would probably battle with anybody who tells me that's not a very good medically, you know, scientifically approved institution. I happen to believe it is, and I'm very strongly in what they're, you know, producing and have, you know, recently in the results of their leukemia and breast cancer, for example. Same time, my husband was an agronomist pomologist, and I do not doubt him in any way when it comes to fruits and nuts. he understands that science better than anybody. So I'm just saying, however, doesn't mean that, you know, my youngest son, you know, with the changes in the atmosphere and the environment and fertilizer and whatever, you know, may not eventually come up with a change to his dad's concept of the, you know, science of pomology. I'm just saying, you know, I think science is something that you continue to change, improve on. I don't think it'll ever be a, you know, a statutory positioned activity. Would you agree? Are we going to be changing it the rest of our lives? I mean, that's what science is, isn't it? It's the creativity, the knowledge, the expansion of what is possible.
Chairman Croft, Representative Nelson, thank you for the compliment. I think you have the gist of what I'm trying to say, that it is more than laws and theories. The medical field is another good example of an area where there are very few laws and theories, but there's an awful lot of good science being
done. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Additional questions? Hearing none, thank you both very much. Before you go, just quickly, though, I wanted to ask, is there a, and I really appreciate you providing us with some different definitions of science. What about the National Academy of Sciences definition? Do they have one?
I'd have to look, Chairman Kroff, I'd have to look into that. I don't know.
We probably have to do that at some point in time, just for additional reference. Thank you both very much. Appreciate it. Chair would like to call Bob Siebert. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you.
And you're from the Oregon Department of Education, correct?
I am, sir.
And you have with you a couple of colleagues?
I do.
Very good.
Actually, they're my contribution to the expertise at the state.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Bob Seward, and I'm the Associate Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction at the Oregon Department of Education. And with me, I have Kathleen Vanderwall to my right, who has a Ph.D. in geological sciences from Brown University, has worked in the oil industry and at the Hatfield Marine Center prior to coming, our luck having her come to the Oregon Department of Education. To my left is Ginger Redlinger. She has a master's degree in both science and mathematics, has taught for 10 years at middle school and high school level before coming to the department. I just want to make a couple of prefatory comments, and then I'm going to turn it over to the people who really know something about this topic. We take this subject very seriously, the definition of science, in the context of education, because this would be like trying to define literature, or trying to define history, or trying to define any other content area. It is very difficult. It is fraught with very serious, complex sets of principles and interactions. And so this is really a very serious subject for us. And so we're here to talk a little bit about that. The other point to be made is that if there is a definition of science, our agency is one that will be impacted. It will be impacted as well, financially as well as how we do our job. So, again, we take this very seriously. Kathleen is going to have a few comments, and then we'll ask Ginger to make some comments as well. Kathleen's on this slide.
I'm sorry, Kathleen. For the record, state your name.
Kathleen Vanderwall.
You can pull the microphone over.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Kathleen Vanderwall, Mr. Chair, representatives, we wanted to bring forward to you the definition of science that Oregon Public Schools use. You have it in the a document that we provided. And this is the definition from which our academic standards in science have been more fully developed. So, in a sense, we would argue that those standards plus the small definition would become the working definition of science in our classrooms. It's based on the work of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the National Research Council. The work of the National Research Council is supported by the National Science Foundation, NASA, the National Institutes of Health, as well as the National Academy of Science. I don't want to go over and say that this definition is precisely what you would find from the National Academy of Sciences, but it's been our interpretation of that definition, and it's been the one that we've used since 1995 and has gone through the public review. Most states have science education standards based on those of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the National Research Council. I haven't carefully analyzed their umbrella definitions, however. We've provided an example where the definition that was brought forward by House Bill 2416 could limit science educational opportunities, especially in elementary and middle schools. And Ms. Redlinger is here to comment on that.
Welcome, for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Kroff, and thank you, representatives, for hearing our testimony. Being in my last job as a sixth grade teacher of science and math, I immediately thought about the consequences of the words testable laws and the implication that that had for our youngest students in the state, one not having necessarily the tools to measure, and I don't mean meters, I mean the metric stick, rulers and balances and scales. I'm thinking more along the line of the mathematical understanding that's necessary to apply that kind of investigative approach to an observation that they may be making at the third grade or at the sixth grade even. They may be able to observe the example that I used here, changes of state of water as it goes from ice to a liquid to a vapor. But when I talk to them about the testable laws that are associated with that, the inverse relationship between temperature and volume of a substance, that would not make sense to them. So it may really inhibit their ability to learn science. And if we were challenged, I don't know we could defend, based on that definition that, as it's proposed, that we were actually doing a science. These are intellectual activities. Science is—it's a process. It's not only group review, as they say, the gold standard being the peer journal, but it's also interaction with what you observe going on and your mind being involved in that activity. And when students are young, they need to develop an understanding of theoretical versus experimental, and they need to engage in both those activities. And I'm just concerned that the law as it's defined, or as it would be changed, would inhibit the students from being able to do that. And if you have any questions, we'll take them now.
Okay. I would be glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. The first question I would have you, Bob, you'd made a statement earlier about this would have a financial impact on the department. How so?
We go about setting standards for content and also performance standards for the statewide assessments in a very systematic way, involving a lot of people from the field, school teachers, school principals, people that are experts in the field of that particular academic subject. So that means a lot of inclusion of folks that interact with us, give us recommendations, give us information about how those standards are set. It isn't hugely expensive, but it does cost money to do that. If this statute is passed, we would have to look at to what extent that would change our standards. And if, in fact, it does have an effect on the standards, we'd have to go through that process again with the science standards system. So that would have certainly impact on the Department of Education staffing, but also on some real dollars.
Okay. Thank you. Members, questions? Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, Mr. Seward, mm-hmm. Dr. Vandervalt, and Ms. Rittlinger, is it possible that we could add this definition to the definition in House Bill 2416? If we were just added it without deleting the one that is here, do you have a copy of this bill?
We do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would that be possible?
Kathleen?
Good question. Of course, as a scientist, I'd want to analyze that. hate to jump into
with replicatable methods.
Right. That's exactly right. Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, and representatives of the committee, I think that to put both in would it would be a little confusing because there's overlap, and I have to say that the words that bothered me in the proposed definition in House Bill 2416 was gathering knowledge. I think that could well limit in some cases, because it drives us in a sense to what's in maybe the encyclopedias or what's written, as opposed to this expanded definition. So I would want to weigh the two. I think that certainly with perhaps a working group made up of those agencies who are making testimony, we may well be able to bring them together and resolve the differences so that it would work.
May I add, Mr. Chair and Representative Dulson, I'm a literature major and taught literature for many years in high school, so I'm out of my depth here to some extent. What I do know is that I'm concerned about defining any content or knowledge area in statute, mainly as much as I'd be concerned about defining what literature is in statute, because there are so many things that are new and different that come to us as a culture on a regular basis that may or may not fit a particular definition. I think if we say the word science, that we know that there is a process that we use to discover and know things that we don't discover. Now, you asked the question earlier about could we use Galileo's definition. Well, if we would have used the definition of science that just predated Galileo, we would be in a very difficult situation, because Galileo, in fact, changed the nature of science.
As far as that, it changed.
So do we want to put into statute a definition that, in fact, is really unknowable in many ways, that it changes constantly given the nature of the development of science, the nature of development of literature and history. You asked the question, would we always be coming back and changing? My answer would be absolutely you would, on a real regular basis, given the growth in knowledge and science.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
If I could just have a follow-up, would you think there'd be something wrong with that, in starting with the definition and knowing that as change happens, you know, Shift happens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I don't think that there's anything innately wrong with trying to define science in statute. It really depends on how the legislature wants to do its business. You will come back to this over and over and over again. Sure. If you believe that that's an important thing for the legislature to do, then certainly that is what you should do. What I would think is that you may at some point think that you're rethinking this so many times. It really isn't something that the legislature would need to fill its attention with. Mm-hmm. But that's your decision and not ours. Right?
And follow up, Mr.
Sure.
Chair. Last issue. I'm a little bit amazed, as a former teacher, that the definition here on Oregon standards does not have any results. I am just, as a teacher, I mean, we were always teaching something that we knew what was going to happen. Every, experiment in biology or chemistry, I knew what was going to happen, even though the kids didn't. And that was why I was teaching it, to prove, a theory. So I'm concerned a little bit that now about education. I think I'm going to work on your standards. It has no testable laws and theories listed here under the educational definition, which is kind of seems unusual to me. You've updated since I was teaching, probably.
Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, and representatives, I think that if you examine the full standards, you would certainly see that we have a wealth of standards in life sciences, physical sciences, and earth space sciences, which would probably contain the knowledge and skills that you were moving your students toward. So those are certainly
new way of thinking
here. But scientific inquiry, as put forth by the American Association for the Advancement of Science and NRC, really focus on scientific inquiry, which is students knowing how to build that knowledge through their own experiences so that they might come to become citizens who are able to analyze what they see in the newspaper in a scientifically critical way. And so I think what you want is in our standards, even if it's not reflected directly in this definition. Okay. But we would like your help whenever you want.
Question to you before you go is, even though science methodologies may change, it still then, does it not bring us back to the place that we need to prove those scientific theories? And that means replicatable evidence that the theory is correct.
Mr. Chair and representatives, I think that varies in
the field of science that you're working in. I think that that's certainly the case in agriculture. I think it's certainly the case in more laboratory-oriented sciences. But if you're in the field of cosmology, if you're an exploration geologist, there are situations where you may complete an investigation, you may present your results to the intended audience for the intended outcomes, but would they be replicable precisely? Maybe not. But in many other fields of science, they will be.
If you were to take a circumstance like you've just described,
mm-hmm.
which is clearly valid,
mm-hmm.
and then you were to say, let's establish nationwide or statewide policy based on that. You see the dilemma we're in? That causes us the issue that why we're here today. It's because out of that inexact issue, we have to make decisions and affect
mm-hmm.
people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and representatives, we certainly empathize with that position and realize that you may need a clear definition for that part of science that you feel is needed in the area of your community.
Okay. Thank you all very much. I do appreciate you coming. We're going to close, members, of public hearing on House Bill 2416, and we have another change. You know, the great thing about politics and farming is it's a lot alike.
It is.
Because Mother Nature's always throwing a curve at you, and you always have to be able to roll with the punches, they say. So we're going to roll with the punches here, members. We are going to... we've been requested that we pull back House Bill 2372 back into this committee today for further consideration. I have asked Representative Gilman if he would make the motion to suspend the rules. We will make that motion. It is not discussable. It is not debatable. And I'm going to open up a work session in House Bill 2372, and then we'll finish this process. Representative Gilman.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2372.
Very good. Members, Representative Gilman has moved we suspend the rules for the purposes of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2372. Clerk, please call the roll, please.
Representative Smith.
Aye, I guess.
That's a very good answer.
Well, I guess so, too. Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Worth.
No.
Representative
Gilman? Yes.
Yes.
It's the one that didn't have the financial.
Oh, if you were to bring it back. Oh, whatever. No.
Representative Worth, are you sure you wouldn't like to reconsider your vote? I know that
we're bringing it back.
We're going to bring it back because my guess is we're going to be waiting until there's a revenue impact.
Yes.
That we're voting on.
So perhaps you would like to reconsider your vote, Representative.
Perhaps I would. I would like to change it to yes.
I think I'm going insane today.
Yes. She's a yes.
Yes. Yes, I mean yes five times.
And Chair Krupp is a yes. House Bill 2372, the motion carries and the rules have been suspended. And Representative Gilman, you're going to move.
I am.
No, hang on. Time out.
Don't move.
The bill is back in committee.
Okay. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2372. We're good to go. That simple. Now, before we go any further, members, we have and I thank you for that, members. Appreciate that very much. We would like you to consider introducing Legislative Council Draft 689, which you all should have a copy of, as a committee bill. And Ray, why don't you tell us what this concept is?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 689
allow soil and water conservation districts to acquire conservation easements and highway scenic preservation easements. It requires public hearing before acquisition. It allows districts to make rules regarding care, use, and management of easement. It declares an emergency upon effective upon passage, Mr. Chair. And what the committee is voting on today is solely to get this into the process of the Legislative Assembly, not on the merits of the proposed measure. Mr. Chair.
Again, members, to make it clear that this, again, is only to allow this bill to be moved forward in the process. We are not debating or making any judgment by your vote on introducing this as to the merits of this concept. Any thoughts before we entertain a motion to adopt as a committee bill?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just quickly, this bill was brought back in last September.
I don't know that it was, Representative. I'm not familiar with it.
September 11th. I'm just curious, who brought this bill originally?
Representative, I have no idea.
Mr. Chair, this legislative concept has not been brought to this body. The date of 9/11/02 is solely the drafting date of this legislative concept. It has not been brought before the legislature for adoption, consideration, or in any other manner. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Smith.
I'll make a motion to adopt LC 689 as a committee bill.
Thank you. Members, it has been motioned by Representative Smith that we adopt LC 689 as a committee bill. Discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? Let it so be noted. Close the work session on House Bill, LC 689. Members, the situation remains fluid. We do have a schedule out for Tuesday. Chances are it'll be amended at the rate we're going. So thank you all very much.
Are we not having a work session on House Bill 2416?
Would you like to have a work session, Representative?
I so move.
Members, it has. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2416 at the request of Representative Nelson. We do need to make another formal motion because I needed to open up the work session first.
Mr. Chair, I move we open a work session for the purpose of considering House Bill 2416.
Okay, members, it has been moved that we adopt House Bill 2416, or move the bill.
Mr. Chair, from a parliamentary standpoint, if I may interject, you have put out notice, the 24-hour required notice for a possible work session, so you do not need any motion to open the work session. Any motion would come at once the work session is opened, addressing the bill.
Representative Nelson, I would entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I first removed my previous motion, and I move that we move House Bill 2416 to the House floor.
Thank you. Members, you've heard the motion discussion. Please. Representative Hunt, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it just seems like based on the testimony we've got, based on the fact that none of the seven of us are scientists, I guess I've heard enough testimony to both make me believe that it's worth looking into forming a definition of science, but also to convince me that we're not there yet in terms of passing forward a bill. So I don't see that we're at the point where we should move forward, so I'm a no today.
Okay. Representative Beyer.
I seem to be difficult today, but I also agree. Some of you have had the advantage of having this discussion in the past that we haven't, and believe me, this is a lot to take in, the implications of it all, what it might mean, and how it can be applied. And I would rather have some time on it.
Representative Worth?
I'm also a no, Mr. Chair. I think this bill is a solution looking for a problem. I'm not convinced that what we get right now is not based on verifiable science. And for that reason, I'll be voting no.
Representative Smith, what are your thoughts? I'm just curious.
You don't really want to know my thoughts, Mr. Chair.
I think it would.
We talked about getting a definition, a different definition. So I will vote for this because I voted for it last session. I would feel more comfortable. I thought we were going to have another work session on it or another public hearing.
Representative Gilman, how do you feel about moving this bill at this time?
I'm not prepared to move the bill at this time.
Okay. Just a cursory polling, Representative Nelson, it appears that the bill has a somewhat dubious success of succeeding today. Would you be gracious enough to allow us maybe a little more time to work the process?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that opportunity to let you work the process. However, I did not move this bill to the floor with a due pass. I'd just like to bring that to the focus of the members of this committee who may not have noticed that I did not do that.
We noticed.
Thank you, and it is so noted. Ray, what would be the consequences in parliamentary procedure if we were to vote on the motion as it is currently on the table and it failed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for any legislative measure that's brought before a committee and voted upon, failure to pass that out of committee under a formal vote essentially, it kills the bill. The committee has said no, that it will not move the bill, and that bill is dead.
Okay. So it would seem that Representative Nelson, it is a good concept, in my opinion, the chair's personal opinion, for us to move forward with something that tries to get a handle on the genie that's out of the bottle in terms of science. But the chair would respectfully request that you give us an opportunity to move the bill, so work the bill through the process, perhaps, so that it wouldn't fail here and be considered final for this session.
Mr. Chair, out of respect to you, having served with you and knowing you keep your good word, I'll be happy to withdraw my motion.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll close a work session on House Bill 2416. Members, we will certainly hear this bill again, of that I can assure you, and we'll further work through the process. And again, thank you. We will be on the schedule on Tuesday. Ray has the agenda out already, I think. And if we have modifications, we'll make them on Monday. Thank you all very much. We're adjourned.
Kill the sound.